ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ब्रह्मानुहारतो यत एव भोगा आभोगिनो यं तव विप्रदेहा तिवायतस्तात्पतनाक्षमं चेत्।
O Brahman, fully in knowledge of transcendence, you have nothing to do and therefore you are lying down. It is also understood that you have no money for sense enjoyment. How then has your body become so fat? Under the circumstances, if you do not consider my question impudent, kindly explain how this has happened. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Generally, those engaged in spiritual advancement take food only once, either in the afternoon or in the evening. If one takes food only once, naturally he does not become fat. The learned sage, however, was quite fat, and therefore Prahlad Maharaj was very much surprised. Because of being experienced in self-realization, a transcendentalist certainly becomes bright-faced. And one who is advanced in self-realization must be considered to possess the body of a Brahman. Because the bright-faced, saintly person was lying down and not working, and yet was quite fat, Prahlad Maharaj was puzzled and wanted to question him about this.
Kavikalpo nipuno trikchitra priyakatasama lokasya kurtava karma sheshetad vikshitapiva.
Your honor appears learned, expert, and intelligent in every way. You can speak very well, saying things that are pleasing to the heart. You see that people in general are engaged in fruitive activities, yet you are lying here inactive. Purport. Prahlad Maharaj studied the bodily features of the saintly person, and through the man's physiognomy, Prahlad Maharaj could understand that he was intelligent and expert. Although he was lying down and not doing anything, Prahlad was naturally inquisitive about why he was lying there inactive.
Sri Narada Uvacha Saitam Dvaityapatina Paripristo Mahamuni Smayamanastamabhyaya Tadvag Amrita Yantritaha.
Narada Muni continued, when the saintly person was thus questioned by Prahlad Maharaj, the king of the Daityas, he was captivated by the shower of nectarine words, and he replied to the inquisitive Prahlad Maharaj with a smiling face.
Sri Brahman Uvacha Bhavan Nanvarya Samata Iho paramayor nirnam padanyatma cha sukshasha.
The saintly Brahman said, O best of the Asuras, Prahlad Maharaj, who are recognized by advanced and civilized men, you are aware of the different stages of life because of your inherent transcendental eyes, with which you can see a man's character and thus know clearly the results of acceptance and rejection of things as they are. Purport. A pure devotee like Prahlad Maharaj can understand the minds of others because of his pure vision and devotional service. A devotee like Prahlad Maharaj can study another man's character without difficulty.
Om Agyantimidandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha.
Prahlad Maharaj is inquiring from the Avaduta, who is lying in the forest. Laying there in a condition of life that one with material vision would consider him an utter social outcast and a madman. Someone who just could not make it in society. Of course, this is always the criticism of the materialistic persons towards those who are dedicating their lives in the loving service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That such persons, they just did not have the courage, the strength, the capacity to be a success within society. And therefore, one takes to the profession of just a useless person who is not contributing anything or doing anything of any benefit to themselves or others. Of course, in the age of Kali Yuga, to some extent, in fact, to a large extent, this is true. People simply out of laziness, they take to spiritual life. But Krishna consciousness, real spiritual life, is not for the lazy man. It is for a man who is willing to sacrifice everything, including the prestige and the enjoyments of this world in the service of God, for the benefit of all living beings. At New Vrindavan, in the early days, in 1968, Srila Prabhupada came to visit. And he could understand that many people were dropping out of the mainstream of society to become like hippies in America, simply out of laziness. Because after all, going to school and studying took a lot of energy and a lot of work. Getting a job and a family and making it in this world is a very, very difficult endeavor and takes much work. What to speak of going into the military and going through intensive training and risking your life in war. It is very hard work. So therefore, for many people, it is very easy to go to a spiritual community, to an ashram, and there, you don't have to work, you can just be peaceful, you can eat, you can sleep, you could chant some mantras and be happy. Srila Prabhupada warned us. New Vrindavan, he said, do not allow anyone to live here because if they are lazy. If they are lazy, they must go. They must work hard. They must rise early. They must chant the holy name, have kirtan. They must attend Bhagavatam class. They must take some prasad. And then they must obediently go out and work hard throughout the day in Krishna's service. And then they come back in the evening and they work hard, chanting the holy names, having the kirtan, hearing Bhagavad Gita. Then let them take rest. Prabhupada was very much aware of the tendency. And Prabhupada oftentimes condemned in his remembrances of what things were like in India. He condemned people taking to the life of sadhus or coming to live in an ashram out of laziness. Because the spirit of devotion has to be something that is full of life, full of energy, full of determination. If that is not there, Krishna consciousness cannot take place. Therefore, in our ashrams, we must understand that the common man, they already have a natural tendency to think that those who are taking to the spiritual path are simply lazy fellows who just cannot make it in society, who just do not want to make it in society. We are working hard. We are doing something very practical. But what are they doing? They are just sitting around, chanting the holy names, eating, begging donations so that they can have food and a place to sleep. This is the tendency. And factually, in many ashrams and temples, this is exactly the case. The pujari is worshipping the deity, and he is collecting funds simply to maintain himself. And therefore, there's no spiritual inspiration. But ours is a preaching movement. And preaching must be based on preaching by example, not simply by what we say. People will only take what you say seriously to the extent they see what you do, and it confirms what you say. So therefore, if our preaching is to be effective, the brahmacharis and sannyasis living in this temple, the grihasthas living outside must see that they are working harder than us. But they're getting no pay for themselves. They're sleeping on the floor, they're eating simple food, they're working hard simply out of compassion, simply out of devotion, simply out of obedience and love to their guru and Krishna. My God, how many lifetimes do I have to take till I can be like that? That is how the outside people, the congregational people and the people in general, should see the brahmacharis and sannyasis. And the only way that can take place is we have to live by that principle honestly and sincerely within our own heart and lives. Therefore, to live in the ashram, the standard must be complete obedience. Without complete obedience, one must be a congregational member. One can be a devotee. Such persons, we should not criticize any devotee. Any devotee who has agreed to chant the holy names of the Lord, any devotee who has agreed to accept spiritual life, Krishna consciousness, as the ultimate goal, they should be given all respect. They should be given all help and encouragement. But the ashram, the temple of the Lord, must be that place which is the shining beacon example of light for all living beings to strive to become like and to follow. Tattva, awakening. And therefore, those who are living here must be of the highest quality of sincerity, not material quality. A person can be illiterate and incapable of anything, but if he's sincere to be obedient and to give his life to work very hard to spread the movement of his Guru Maharaj, that person has all qualifications. That person is perfect. So therefore, within our ashram, we must know that one of the greatest diseases is laziness. Do not be lazy, ever. Not only is it a disease that will destroy our own spiritual advancement, but it is a contagious disease. It spreads like an epidemic. If one person is disobedient or lazy, then everyone around them is influenced and affected by that. And the whole spirit of the congregation within the ashram is disturbed. Everyone is factually depending on one another. The service, the greatest service that we have to our God brothers and God sisters is to enthuse them to surrender. More by our example, by our word, than our words. When we are surrendering, when we are not just out of force, do I really have to do this? Can't somebody else do it? If nobody else will do it, then maybe I'll do it. This spirit is the greatest disservice to Guru, Krishna, and the Vaishnavas. Of course, much greater than that is, no, I will not do it. It's not my propensity. The greatest service is to show enthusiasm, to surrender to the higher authority coming down from Krishna and spiritual master. Because that enthusiasm creates an energy of life. Laziness creates an energy of spiritual death. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said, if you are not enthusiastic, you are an animal. You're dead. To be a preacher, the most important qualification is enthusiasm. You cannot preach without enthusiasm. And this is a preaching movement. And every single devotee must preach to every other devotee by their enthusiasm, by their life, by their willingness to sacrifice for a higher cause. Now, here, Prahlad Maharaj is inquiring from this man, how is it, you see, Prahlad could understand, due to his very advanced spiritual vision, that this man was not just an ordinary person. He was a Paramhamsa. Just by seeing the physical features of this man, Prahlad Maharaj could read his heart. He could see that he was on the Paramhamsa stage. But for the sake of people in general, he was inquiring from him. One thing he inquired was this. There are so many people suffering out there in Maya, and you're a great saint. What are you doing laying here in the forest? Why aren't you out there preaching? In so many words, he's asking like this. What about everyone else out there? And then he asked that you are not living in an ashram or a monastery. You're not begging door to door. Nobody's feeding you. If you're not living like that, you have to work hard just to eat in this world. You appear to be a very lazy man just laying here. But how are you fat? How is it possible that so much food is coming to you? Prabhupada in this regard describes how devotees of the Lord, they are not interested in sense gratification. Therefore, devotees of the Lord, he says, generally they eat just once a day. Therefore, there's no possibility of them becoming fat. Without sense control and without control of the mind, there is no question of advancement in devotional service. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, this path is not for one who eats too much or eats too little, sleeps too much or sleeps too little. This path is for one who is moderate, temperate in his physical activities. In other words, a devotee of the Lord eats, sleeps, engages in all the bodily activities with the meditation of Krishna, how can I best serve you? In every circumstance, in every situation in our life, practically, we are always faced with a decision.
Huh?
We have so many alternatives.
How to do what we're doing. When we're eating, it's not that the guru and the sadhus are right there next to us always saying, okay, stop here. We have a decision. Which of these preparations will I take, and when will I stop?
Huh?
When we're talking during the day, we have the decision, what should I talk about, and when should I stop talking about it? What should I look at, and what should I not look at? What should I think, and what should I not think? Huh? Who should I associate with, who should I not associate with?
Practically every moment, we're faced with decisions. Decisions that we have to answer ourselves. From the sadhus, we can get the basic principle of how to make these decisions.
But we cannot expect that they're going to make every decision for us. They can tell us how to decide. But then we have to implement their words in our life. If you are sincere, Krishna will give you the intelligence. And if you are insincere, Krishna will take away your intelligence. Therefore, the most important qualification is our sincerity. We were speaking last night. Spiritual advancement is not just a mechanical acceptance of a particular sampradaya. Spiritual advancement is determined by our sincerity. Someone may be in a religion that is speaking a much lesser understanding of the absolute truth. But if that person is wholeheartedly sincere and obediently following and praying from the bottom of their heart, they will make much more spiritual advancement than you if you're in the highest system of religion, but you're not really trying. You're not really sacrificing. You're not really humbling yourself in a prayerful mood before God and His devotees. So we must learn to judge ourselves by the quality of the sincerity of how we are willing to sacrifice for the higher cause of Guru and Krishna. And if we have this basic principle within our heart, then every decision that comes before us, We will make the perfect choice. Whether from the worldly point of view, it was the wisest choice or not, doesn't make so much difference as far as our spiritual advancement. If our genuine motivation is Krishna, how can I best serve you? How can I best humble myself before your devotees? And you're honestly making the decision based on that, then you are perfect in the eyes of God. And it is this mentality, this meditation, that we must constantly cultivate at every moment. Dasosmi. We are the servant. We are the servant of the devotees. Living in an ashram especially, our meditation should be, what activity will best help uplift all the devotees around me? Because there's no other activity that will be more pleasing to my spiritual master in Krishna. Of course, everyone, in whatever ashram they are in, they should cultivate this meditation in their life. Krishna in the heart reciprocates according to how we approach Him. In how we are trying to inspire inspire, enthuse, and render service to his devotees. That is how we approach God. Huh? It is said that a Madhyamadhikari, we are all struggling and striving to be Madhyamadhikaris. He is one who worships the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who obeys in obedient service with a mood of reverence and devotion, Guru and the sadhus who are superior to him. In other words, we must come to the temple. We must come to the temple and we must worship with sincere prayer and devotion Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. Anything we do before the deities, we must be conscious it is worship. When we chant the holy names, we are worshiping him. When we dance, it is not a fun form of entertainment for us. It may or may not be the result. But we are dancing as an act of worship, according to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's example. It is a worship. But in India, this is the land of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. People will be most inspired by our dancing if they see that it is worship. That means we have to come together to train ourselves to dance in a very graceful and devotional manner. It should not look like disco dancing. People will get the wrong idea. Huh? That has been the problem. People criticize our dancing not when it's graceful and devotional, but when it appears disco-like. Huh? They just think, oh my God, what is this? This is what I do at night. And they're doing it in the morning. Therefore, the dancing should be full of ultimate enthusiasm, but it should be expressed in a very devotional, spiritually enthusing manner, like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When we see pictures of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is always, his arms are raised, he's always dancing, but always very graceful. You can practically see his love of God in every movement of his body. Huh? So when we come before the deity, we must worship in the mood of complete worship and obedience to glorify. Our relationship with the senior Vaishnavas is obedience. We are their servant. We are simply meant for their service. We inquire submissively and we render service to Guru, and factually anyone senior to us is a representative of our Guru. To those who are on equal level, we befriend them. We embrace with them. We speak intimately with them on the basis of how we can help each other become Krishna conscious. We encourage one another. We are dedicated amongst our friends to helping one another, to be compassionate to one another. If someone's down, we pick him up. If we are down, we allow him to pick us up. We work together, hand in hand. Put aside all personality, ego, and everything else that maybe appear different. We have a one united cause, the service of Guru and Gauranga. Therefore, we become intimate friends on this basis. To those who are in a lesser position than us, our only business is to uplift them, encourage them. Never criticize, never condemn, always being trying to uplift the innocent. Sometimes one of our worst reputations is because we call materialistic people karmis, but we say it in such a way that they're just like the lowest of the low. Stay away from them. But actually, being a karmi means someone who is attached to fruit of activities. When we use the word karmi, it's not we should say it like we're spitting on them. We should say that word as if we are reaching out from the bottom of our heart. My God, these poor people, with compassion, let me help them. And to those who are blasphemous and atheistic, a Madhyamadhikari, an aspiring devotee, must completely avoid such persons. You can try, but if you see that your endeavor to uplift them is of no avail, if a person has a serpent-like mentality, if you feed the most nutritious food of milk and bananas to a serpent, it only increases his venom, and then he bites you with that venom, and it only has a worse effect to kill you. So if someone is blasphemous of Guru and Krishna, we must simply, with folded hands, Hare Krishna, and go somewhere else. So if we follow this principle very strictly of understanding how to relate to every personality that comes before us in life according to the order of God, then we will make very nice spiritual advancement in all circumstances. And when we come together as a congregation with this knowledge, with this intelligence, then there is no power of Maya that can possibly disturb our spiritual progress. Nor is there any power of this material energy that could inflict harm upon our mission. Because this is a spiritual mission protected by God, guided by God. We must always, by our activities, by our words, by our life, we must constantly keep God in front. And we must keep our own separate interests and our self-sense gratification far behind. A pure devotee has given it up altogether. A neophyte devotee has not yet been able to give up his sense gratification, but he very conscientiously keeps it behind, and Krishna's service in front. So this great sadhu, the Avadhuta, is about to speak to Prahlad Maharaj. He has begun by glorifying Prahlad. First, Prahlad is praising him and asking him significant questions for the benefit of all others. And the Avadhuta, in this first verse of his narration, he begins by praising Prahlad Maharaj. You see, when two great souls come together, the first thing that happens is their heart just becomes overwhelmed with the ecstasy of seeing the pure qualities of the other, and they simply want to glorify one another. And then we will find that he speaks the most wonderful philosophy, which is enlightening and for the ultimate benefit of all living beings. So tomorrow we will begin discussing the instructions of the Avadhuta Brahman to Prahlad Maharaj. Is there any questions? This is part 3, chapter number 13.
personality inclusive of physical, mental and intellectual, doesn't each person differ from the other? And if so, isn't there going to be some variation from one to the other? Is it very how do you know which is, if you are not doing it over or you are not doing it under, and is it perfectly temperate? Because it may be too much for somebody and it may be less for somebody in something. Physically it may be less, or in some mentally it may be more. How do you balance it? How do you know which is temperate for you?
There are two processes. One is you must have a guru. And not only a guru, but you must have the Association of Advanced Devotees. In other words, you must have guru and you must have the sadhus. And you inquire submissively from them. They know better about you than you know about you. Huh? When we think we know what we need, we are in a very dangerous condition in spiritual life. Because the mind is our worst enemy. Therefore, we have to admit, I do not know what I need. Because you see, in almost all cases, what you think you need is what you want. Huh? It's almost impossible to discriminate on your own between what you need and what you want. But the authorities in Krishna consciousness under Guru, they know what you need. They know what Krishna wants, not what you want. Huh? They know what your soul wants, not your mind and your senses. So therefore, we must inquire submissively from the great souls to get an understanding of what is our nature and how to engage it in Krishna's service. Now, when we get that direction and we get that instruction, then the thousands of little decisions that come to us throughout the day, we have to sincerely, constantly be asking, as we were talking, Guru Maharaj, Krishna, how can I best serve you? You've given me the direction. I know what you want. Now, how, in this particular little circumstance, can I best pursue the direction I've been given? Huh? You have to get your major instructions from the spiritual master and the sadhus. And all the details that come, you have to pray, please, Krishna, how can I best serve you? And my service to you is to pursue the instruction I've been given. Give me the intelligence. My desire is that. And Krishna will give you intelligence. Whatever decision you make, if it is based on that sincere prayer, then the decision is perfect. You can know that 100%. There's never reason to be in doubt. You simply have to search and examine your own sincerity of your heart. And if your decision is made, and then your spiritual authority comes and says, no, you should do it this way, the test that you're sincere is, you'll say, all right, I will do it. Huh? I am your servant. Why not? If the opportunity is there to accept higher guidance, you should accept it. If Krishna is putting you in the situation where you do not have that opportunity, and if he's putting you in the situation where he's not giving you the intelligence, you should understand this is all his divine arrangement to increase the humility of your prayer. Huh? It is God's grace. And in that condition, any decision you make is pleasing to Krishna. Huh? That is Krishna's arrangement. If he keeps giving you the intelligence, you may start thinking it's your intelligence, right? So sometimes Krishna puts you in a situation where you realize you don't know anything. You don't even know what to do or what not to do. I have no intelligence. Krishna, how can I best serve you? How can I best serve you? When he doesn't immediately give you the answer, he just puts you in a situation where you have to become more helpless and humble to pray deeper and harder. If you're sincere, you'll do that. Huh? You'll be screaming out in your heart, Krishna, what should I do? How can I best serve you? And then all your desires for sense gratification will start coming out, and all your desires for devotional service will start coming out. And you'll say, Krishna, what do you want? I'm being invaded by my own desires. What do you want? Huh? If you're sincere, the longer Krishna waits to give you the answer, the deeper and more desperate your prayer will be. Correct? So you should take that as Krishna's mercy. Sarvasya chaham hridi shani vishto matasmi dirgyanam apohanam cha. Krishna says, I am the source of knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. For his devotee who is sincere, all three are equally his mercy. Sometimes he gives you knowledge, sometimes he makes you forget, and sometimes he... knowledge, remembrance, forgetfulness. All three of them, if you are sincere, they are the mercy of Krishna for your spiritual advancement. Huh? So if you are in that state of consciousness, then whatever decision you make, you should understand it will be perfect in the eyes of God. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.